From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The battle to protect religious liberties at the state level goes on. This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello and Register Senior Editor Joan Desmond share the latest insights. Also, just how close will we be able to get to Pope Francis when he comes to the U.S.? Elena Rodriguez gets an update from Philadelphia Archdiocese Communications Director Kenneth Gavin on the World Meeting of Families and the papal visit to the U.S. next September. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the Register, and our producer, Elena Rodriguez. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Joan Frawley Desmond, is the Register's senior editor. Joan is an award-winning journalist, widely published in Catholic, ecumenical, and secular media. Joan is a graduate of the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for Studies of Marriage and Family. She'll be talking with Jeanette about the battle to protect religious liberties.
Well, Joan, it's great to have you on Register Radio this week. You know, in the past couple of weeks, we've been looking at some very interesting dynamics in Indiana regarding a state effort to establish a law that protects religious freedom in the state, and it received a huge amount of pushback, and in the end, the law was changed to a point that many say was really ineffective. Can you tell us what happened in Indiana?
Thanks for having me on the show, Jeanette. Well, what happened was towards the end of March, as we moved to Holy Week, in fact, Governor Pence in Indiana signed the law on the 26th of March. At that point, criticism of the law started to escalate. The law was called the Indiana Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and it's similar, modeled on the federal RFRA, as they're called, RFRAs. And basically, the idea is that it helps protect religious freedom by establishing kind of rules of engagement in a court. It doesn't provide absolute protection to religious freedom. It just says you can have your day in court, state your argument, which goes as follows. You say, I have a sincere religious belief that is being violated, usually by a government law, but sometimes by some other action from an individual. And this is unfairly burdening my religious freedom. And then the court looks at it and says, well, you know, is there a compelling state interest? If there is such an interest, did they use the least burdensome way to address that interest? So in the case of the Indiana RFRA law, this was passed by Pence. And at that point, critics really took to the airwaves, took to social media. Their argument was that Indiana's RFRA provided, quote, what they call a license to discriminate generally against same-sex couples was their primary allegation. They said the law was going to shield you know, small businesses, bakers, florists, photographers who might not want to participate in same-sex marriages. Pence also pushed back and said that was not the point of the law, said the law is not there to shield the discrimination, but it is there to bolster religious freedom in changing times. Ultimately, after a group of critics, including tech business leaders like Apple's CEO Tim Cook, the NCAA, and celebrities became so critical and vowed to actually initiate a boycott of the state that could affect its reputation and right. its economy, that Pence agreed to make changes.
And what are those changes? I mean, basically, many people have said they render the law ineffective. What is the final law?
The final law went from the original federal RFRA outlined what I said earlier. The law that was passed in Indiana initially specified individuals could also be involved in lawsuits and not just the government. From there, after criticism, there was additional language added that said this law would never be used to permit or shield any kind of discrimination between against same-sex couples or any issue related to gender identity. And people felt that that was not the way to go. Supporters
right.
of the law felt it would have been better to let the law stand, maybe return it to the original federal language. It was a slight tweak of that language. But leave the law as is and let these issues be addressed in the court. Let a baker or a florist, if it came to that, have their day in court. But I do yeah. want to make this point. No RFRA has been used to shield any kind of discrimination up to that point.
That's right.
At all. And Doug Laycock, who I interviewed for my story, the leading lawyer dealing with religious freedom issues, he's advocated before the Supreme Court on them. He's actually a supporter of same-sex marriage, but he made it very clear. He said it's never been used to discriminate. Once or twice people tried to use the law for what he called discrimination. I don't know what those cases were, but they did not succeed. So there's no legacy of discrimination for RFRA. And supporters said this was really just a manufactured charge.
Yeah, this is very interesting because this wasn't a situation where there was a singular purpose to this law as it was. It was billed by the media and by, you know, as you said, some of these tech and business leaders. It's very interesting because it wasn't that you could say no comment if you were a business or someone who was asked about this issue. I mean, the coach of Duke University was asked about this issue, and he said, no, I don't want to comment, looking to the Final Four, which is going to be in Indiana, and he said, no, I don't want to comment on that issue. And he took all this flack for actually commenting. He didn't want to get involved in the issue, but if you don't support the gay lobby in this, then you become a target of their frustration. And Joan, describe the kind of people who do take this law for recourse. What is it that this law has been used for?
Basically, the law was originally passed with strong bipartisan support and signed by President Bill Clinton, back in 1993 to protect rights of religious minorities. A Muslim prisoner who, you know, wants to grow a short beard because of his faith. You know, they're very, very relatively minimal issues, but very important to the religious person. And again, often a vulnerable religious minority. These are the people that will really suffer if there's an issue. However, Jeanette, to speak to your question, I think the law started to draw more scrutiny and then became less popular among those who feared that the law would be used to mitigate policies that they supported. So, for example, the Hobby Lobby case last year, that used a RFRA. The federal RFRA was the basis of the Hobby Lobby legal victory. And as I said, the federal RFRA basically says, you know, if you have a sincere religious belief and you believe that government policy is violating it, you can initiate a lawsuit. And that's what happened. And basically, the Supreme Court found that the federal government imposing the HHS contraception mandate on an employer like Hobby Lobby was violating their sincerely held religious beliefs, that the government, if this was an important state interest, could find less restrictive means to pursue it. So this is a case where the federal RFRA was used to basically, in a kind of policy issue that some people felt the case should have gone another way, and it didn't. And so then they feared, well, what if this could be used to restrict gay rights in some way? I'm guessing that's what happened. Some of this is speculation, but that's what I understand from what I've read.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Joan Frawley Desmond, a Register senior editor and writer, and we're talking about state efforts to protect religious freedom. Joan, we just have a few minutes left, about 3 minutes left to our show, and I guess I'd like to talk about the editorial that we published last week. It was called Indiana's RFRA Lessons, and this really tries to explain what we can learn from this fight and, in a way, the failure of the religious liberty effort there in that state so that we can go forward with maybe some new vision and some new energy. So what do we learn from this?
Well, I think, Jeanette, what's really key here is that this RFRA battle in Indiana is a part of a pattern that we're seeing emerging with contentious social issues, and particularly those related to same-sex marriage, which has really become radioactive for a lot of people. So what happened was is that opponents of the Indiana RFRA really escalated a very powerful social media campaign, the boycott campaign. And these social media campaigns are sort of designed, many describe them, as kind of a shaming campaign where you feel that you are being ostracized and that your life as you know it will be over, or your institution's life as you know it will be over. And so the effect is that it's a flood. It's a social media flood. It's petitions. You have national focus. You have people, you know, celebrities and others attacking this law, and people think, I can't support the law anymore, and they back off or they change the law or they raise questions about the law. So what we now know is that first, if we're going to have a RFRA, let's say a RFRA comes to your state and legislators are debating this or even passes as it did already in Indiana, you have to be prepared for intimidation as a tactic. But more importantly, you have to have messaging You need to have a very strong communications campaign. It should be positive. It should be clear. It should express respect for all people, including those with same-sex attraction. But you can say, in an era where there's some question about religious freedom, that we need to balance religious freedom as well as issues related to, you know, to the goal of marriage equality for people with same-sex attraction. Whatever the future holds, and this will become much more important as the Supreme Court looks to the issue of same-sex marriage with oral arguments on April 28th, we need to very, very effectively and respectfully articulate a vision of religious freedom in balance with other rights. And we need to find a way to do this, and we can't be ambushed by these social media campaigns and attacks. We need to know what the law says. We need to be able to have people trained to address concerns, and we need to stand our ground.
Well, that's very forcefully said, and I think it's very true. I'm at a conference, and one of the points that were made is we need people who have experienced the frustrations of not having religious liberty or having their religious liberty challenged to speak out, and that those voices, those people who have been, in a way, victims of this problem need to speak out, because that will help people to put a face on the situation. So, Joan, thanks so much for helping to put a face and providing that information so that people know what's at stake. We appreciate all of your work at the Register.
Thank you, Jeanette. It was a pleasure.
When we return, are you thinking about coming to Philadelphia in the fall? Coming up next, we'll have an update on the World Meeting of Families and the visit from Pope Francis. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
I'm Brian Patrick, and here at EWTN News Nightly, we're very much aware our world is changing rapidly. The news can be so troubling, but it helps to get it in the context of Catholic teaching. That's why I encourage you to watch EWTN News Nightly and to subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register. Always faithful, in-depth coverage of crucial issues like religious freedom, the sanctity of all human life, traditional marriage, and Pope Francis, his travels, his powerful homilies, and great features like one of my favorites on St. Joseph, Provider and Protector. Subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register and watch EWTN News Nightly, the perfect combination for faithful Catholics who want the news, who want the truth.
For a free 3-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 3 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello and Elena Rodriguez, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Kenneth Gavin, serves as the Director of Communications for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia and Press Secretary for Archbishop Charles Chaput. He'll be talking with Elena about the many preparations now in progress for the World Meeting of Families and the concurrent visit from Pope Francis.
Ken, it's wonderful to have you here on Register Radio as the Director of Communications for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. We know that we're tapping into a deep source of information. We're all dying to know, how close are we going to be able to get to Pope Francis when he visits the U.S.?
Sure. Well, first, it's my pleasure to be on as a guest and delighted to be chatting about the joyful event that's coming here in September. Both the World Meeting of Families and the visit of Pope Francis to the city of Philadelphia are incredibly wonderful, powerful, transformative, and it's going to be an historic moment for Catholics, but not just for Catholics. It's going to be for the entire city and for the region as well. In terms of how physically close folks will be able to get to Pope Francis is a really good question. We're anticipating some very large crowds to come here to Philadelphia. The things that we know about so far on the Holy Father's itinerary when he's with us here in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection are two events that are going to take place here on Benjamin Franklin Parkway. One will be the Festival of Families on Saturday evening, September the 26th. And the other will be a Mass with the Holy Father on the afternoon of Sunday, September 27th. We're envisioning crowds of somewhere between 750,000 to 1 million for the Saturday evening event. And for Sunday, we're currently estimating a range of around 1.5 million on the parkway for the Mass. So lots of friends will be out there, and that's going to be really exciting. We certainly think that the Holy Father will be will be doing some other things with us here in Philadelphia. But the full itinerary has not yet been released by the Vatican. So we're going to wait and see what other types of events might be in store. But every moment with Pope Francis will be a precious one for all of us.
And even at that, there might be some last-minute changes that we have grown to be accustomed to with Pope Francis, where he kind of surprises everybody. So we can look out to those surprises as well during this trip, I imagine.
You certainly never know, and that's been a great thing. There could be a surprising gesture that's made along the way, and we'll all wait and see what happens. But I think regardless of whatever kinds of events we have with the Holy Father here in Philadelphia, that it's going to be, you're going to see a real touch. He's going to touch humanity in many powerful ways, and I think we're all going to come away from that completely transformed. So we're just going to wait and see, and we're going to do it with great anticipation and joy.
I'd like to highlight your words just now. He's going to touch humanity. And one way to be close to the Holy Father for those of us who may not be able to make it there physically is to tune in through the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and television networks, broadcasting around the world, the papal trip, and definitely we will be having much more information available to you as we cover every step of the way of the Holy Father's visit to the United States in September later this year. And the website to check out all of our coverage for your time zone will be EWTN.com. We'll have a very special website dedicated exclusively to the papal visit. And while the papal visit is going on, another big event is going to be going on as well, Ken Gavin, and that will be the World Meeting of Families and the Congress.
Yes, that's correct. Philadelphia was selected to host the 8th World Meeting of Families, and that announcement was made way back in 2012. It's the first time that the World Meeting of Families is going to be held in the United States, actually. So it's quite an honor to host this global conference that happens once every 3 years. And it's sponsored by the Holy See's Pontifical Council for the Family. So over the past few years, the Archdiocese has been working closely with that Pontifical Council, as well as the World Meeting of Families Philadelphia 2015, which is an entity that has been established to put on that triennial global conference. It's going to be so exciting to welcome the world here to Philadelphia and to talk about family. Because when you look at it, family is really it's the fundamental building block, it's the cornerstone of society, not just in the United States, but globally. And family has such a global appeal because all of us are part of one, no matter what role we play, whether we are a son or a daughter, grandmother, grandfather, uncle, aunt, cousin, sister, niece, nephew, all of us are part of these really unique structures called families. And when we strengthen families and we have strong values that come out of the family building block, that serves all of society better. So if we can, as a result of this Congress, work to overcome the many challenges that families face, not just here in the United States, but globally, and present effective ways to overcome those challenges, what we do is we end up strengthening society around the world by starting at the most fundamental level. And that is going to be really exciting to see it unfold right here in Philadelphia. And I think I want to give you a few examples of some of the topics that we're going to be addressing during the World Meeting of Families Congress. We currently have over 70 speakers from around the world who are slated to speak during the course of the sessions that week. And they're going to look at things that are going to be global in nature. So we're not talking just about hot-button issues that we would think about for families here in North America, or sometimes we get a bit myopic about what challenges will be. But we're going to look at things like poverty in the family. You know, how does that affect family structure? We're going to look at things like how divorce and broken families, how does that affect stability, especially with our young ones? People are struggling with those things all over the place. We'll take a look at health and wellness issues, which in the United States is sometimes not focused on so much. But, you know, if you were to look at other countries, especially in Africa and in third world countries, health and wellness and things like even access to clean drinking water affects family stability. We're going to look at incarceration in the family, and not just, you know, traditional sense of incarceration for someone who may have committed a crime and is serving a sentence, but looking around the globe at how political prisoners are affected by this. We're going to cover the broad scope throughout the week, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see. It's going to be an eye-opener for many people here in the United States to understand what challenges families face globally and to work to address those. We've also constituted the content of the Congress so that we'll have a very broad appeal. Dr. Mary Beth Yount is the person who is in charge of putting together the content for the entire week. And she is on loan to us from Newman University to work on this project. And Mary Beth had envisioned from the start to split the content in what she called a 60-40 split. 60% of the content would be of an immediate appeal to a Christian of any denomination, not necessarily Catholic, but Christian of any denomination. And 40% of the content would be of appeal to anyone, regardless of their faith tradition, or even to individuals who may not have any faith tradition whatsoever. The reason that we've done that is we want this to be global. This is for more than just Catholics. We want this to be for everyone, because when we build strong families, everyone benefits.
For the betterment of the world. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
This is Register Radio. Elena Rodriguez here speaking to Ken Gavin, who is the Director of Communications for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, about the papal visit to the United States in September and also the World Meeting of Families. Now, I have to imagine as well that this implies a great, tremendous organizational effort, Ken. And I want to ask you if members from other cities and other archdioceses where the Pope is also going to be visiting, like D.C. and New York, if they have reached out to you, if there's a unified organizational team among dioceses.
Sure. I specifically, in my role as the communications director, am working very closely with my counterparts at the Archdiocese of New York and the Archdiocese of Washington, as well as the United States Conference for Catholic Bishops. From the communications standpoint, you know, with the Pope coming to the United States, we want to make every part of that visit visible, not just to folks here in the U.S., but in the world. So we're working together very closely on the communication strategy from the National Front, and to make sure that there is a seamless experience, you know, for people who are trying to see what's going on city to city as Pope Francis moves up the Eastern Seaboard with this trip here. We're working very closely with them on that front with the papal visit. And I think there's another track we have to look at, too, organizationally, and that's with the World Meeting of Families itself. Obviously, we're going to be having lots and lots of people come into Philadelphia for the Congress itself, and for the presence of the Holy Father on that Saturday and Sunday. So there are lots of logistical items that we need to attend to in terms of security, in terms of transportation issues, in terms of volunteers. The list goes on and on and on. The great thing is that we've got lots of folks working within the World Meeting of Families office who have a great deal of experience working on very, very, very large events. And they're doing a fantastic job of pulling together all of the details. They've been working on it for many months. And the Archdiocese of Philadelphia has been really blessed to see great positive cooperation from civic and business leaders throughout the region here in Philadelphia to work on everything that we need to have in place to welcome the world when they come here in September, because they are coming.
They are coming. And Ken Gavin, Director of Communications for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, it's really a pleasure to have you here on Register Radio. I hear from a lot of people in parishes that their concern is, oh my goodness, how am I ever going to find a hotel room? Is the city completely maxed out? Is there still time for people to organize pilgrimages up to see the Pope in Philadelphia?
Sure, and I'm glad you brought that point up for clarification, because I've heard that from others too. The best thing to do to try to secure a hotel room is to make sure first that folks are registering for the World Meeting of Families Congress, and they can get information on registration at our website, www.worldmeeting2015.org. Again, that's www.worldmeeting2015.org. Now, one of the things that we have looked at in terms of planning is that in the Philadelphia region, there certainly are a finite number of hotel rooms. So we've tried as much as possible and are still working very assiduously to provide alternate means of accommodations for individuals. One of the ways that we're doing that is through a program called Homestay. Homestay is an international company that has partnered with the World Meeting of Families. They've got lots of experience in programs globally where individuals can open their homes to pilgrims or to individuals who are visiting cities throughout the world for major events. And that's been a very successful launch. We have over 1,000 families in the Philadelphia region that at this point have agreed to open up their homes to pilgrims coming through. More information about that accommodation option can be found, again, on the World Meeting of Families website. We certainly expect that more families will be signing up to open their homes to individuals as well. You know, we've been trying to find as many ways as possible to provide accommodations for folks that are not going to be cost prohibitive to them attending, because we do want as many people to be with us as possible.
And that website again is worldmeeting2015.org. We keep you in our prayers, Ken. This is a huge organizational effort for a great cause.
Thank you so much. You all will be in my prayers as well. It is always a pleasure to talk on Register Radio, and please feel free to reach out at any time.
And we will continue to keep the news coverage of all events regarding the World Meeting of Families and the Papal Visit to the United States through ncregister.com and the National Catholic Register. And, of course, we will have a very special issue close to the date in late September, September 26 and 27, when the Holy Father is going to be visiting the United States, when we will be celebrating the World Meeting of Families and the Congress. Ken Gavin, Director of Communications for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
So many people have told us that the National Catholic Register is one of the few sources of information they trust. They've also said they wish they had known about the Register sooner.
The misinformation in society has led us all to make mistakes in life, mistakes that could have been prevented with a better perspective. At the intersection of faith and culture, the catechetical nature of the Register provides the information that Catholics need, especially if, like me, they were not well catechized or converts to the faith that didn't have the necessary resources to begin with.
Please donate to the Register now. Your donation helps us reach out and provide crucial, faithful content to more Catholics, getting their news from otherwise unreliable sources. To donate, go to ncregister.com and click the Donate tab, or mail your donation to the National Catholic Register, P.O. Box 100699, Irondale, Alabama, 35210. Donate today and change "I wish I had known" to "I know the truth."